This is Snobs on Film.
A demon just attacked me right out in the open on Figueroa.
They don't like you, John. How many have you deported back to hell?
Not some angry half-breed, Midnight. A full-fledged demon here on our plane.
Clearly, I do not have to remind you that is impossible.
And yesterday, I saw a soldier demon trying to chew its way out to a little girl.
Listen, John. Demons stay in hell. Angels in heaven. Great detente of the original superpowers.
Thanks for the history lesson, Midnight. You've been a tremendous help. Now, I need to use the chair.
John, forgetting the fact that it would almost certainly kill you, you know I am neutral. And as long as the balance is maintained, I take no sides.
Before you were a bartender, you were one witch doctor against one, 30 Ashkar, and I...
You were Constantine, the John Constantine, once.
This isn't the usual game. I can feel it. Something's coming.
This is Arthur. I am joined with Isaac and Ayiko, and we are Snobs on Film. Jahan is on assignment, and we'll be back next episode. But today we are talking about the 2005 superhero horror film Constantine, starring Keanu Reeves and Rachel Weisz. The film is based on a DC Comics graphic novel, Hellblazer. The story was written by Kevin Broadbent and Frank Capullo, and directed by Francis Lawrence. And I have the pleasure to present Ayiko to give us the synopsis of Constantine.
Hold on, before she does that, man, it's funny when you said Jahan is on assignment. I guess I've been watching too much Beverly Hills Cop lately, because I watched both of them like recently.
Yeah,
and deep undercover.
Deep. right.
Deep okay. Undercover. Okay, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
That's
Ayiko.
Funny. Okay. Redemption gets center stage in the 2005 comic book occult film Constantine. Keanu Reeves plays writer Alan Moore's creation, a demon-hunting warlock detective who has actually been to hell and back. As a suicide survivor, John Constantine knows that when he dies, he'll become a permanent resident of Satan's retirement community, unless he can find a way to earn God's grace. So when a police detective comes to him for help in the investigation of her sister's death, Constantine becomes entangled in a hellish game being played by half-breed angels, ambitious hellspawns, and Lucifer himself.
So before I get into how this is such a weird movie, I forgot that Alan Moore created this character, right?
Yeah, to be 1,000% accurate, it was Alan Moore and the artist Stephen R. Bissett. Rick Veitch and John Totalbin. This is one of it. I think Constantine's first appearance was in Swamp Thing, which Alan Moore was writing at the time. Mm-hmm. So yeah, this is Alan Moore. This is one of his creations.
Alan Moore, also the creator of Watchmen.
Watchmen, V for Vendetta, mm-hmm. League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, and the author of one of the seminal Batman comics, The Killing Joke.
Mm. Yeah, dude was prolific.
Mm-hmm. And not very, you know, as legend has it, not very happy about his stuff being made into films. But he, you know, like many other writers, comic book writers of the 80s, he was consistently a work for hire. So it's like when he would create something, if he was working for DC at the time, that character would be owned by DC. So Watchmen belonged to DC. Mm-hmm. And many things that they've done with those characters since then, you know, Alan Moore has not been pleased about and has been vocal about it. Mm. But, you know, this completely different conversation, one that we'll have on our sister show, Mad Unreal. But that, you know, what happened in the 80s with these comic book writers and the fact of the lack of control kind of led into these creator-owned comic books, you know, that happened in the 90s. And you got a lot of great characters out of that, you know, and the Vertigos and the Dark Horses and those type of imprints or publishing houses. So, yeah, but anyway, that's another conversation. But, yeah, this is Constantine is an Alan Moore creation. And originally a Brit London based blonde hair dude based on visually based on Sting. So not didn't look like Keanu Reeves, didn't live in Los Angeles. So this is kind of, this film is kind of the Americanized version of Constantine.
Wait, Sting. Hold on. I wasn't paying attention. So
good
Sting
to know.
As in lead
Welcome
singer
to the show,
Police.
Arthur.
Yeah. I did. Yeah, that's deep. I didn't know that.
Sting was, I mean, it's not uncommon for writers to use, you know, just pluck somebody out of the ether and use them for your right. visual. I do it all the time. So yeah, Alan Moore. I don't know if Alan Moore, you know, said it or one of the other creators uh-huh. might have said it, but one of the artists. But yeah, Sting was the visual inspiration for for Constantine in his, you know, original representation.
That's actually cool.
So now we are continuing our redemptive season, where every episode we discuss the film and its redemptive character and or story arc. This film is the poster child of redemption, because out of the gate we find very early that John Constantine is trying to redeem himself and enter into heaven after creating the unforgivable sin of attempting suicide. And if I understood correctly, succeeding, but he was sent back because of a gift that he looks at as a curse, but it's communicated to him and referred to as a gift of being able to see demons and angels, and recognizing the earth as this middle plane between heaven and hell, demons and angels, and being able to have the power to send demons back to hell when they attempt to cross over into this plane of human existence.
Right. It's interesting you said that. It's interesting you said that, because so your hypothesis is that he was allowed to survive his suicide attempt as a young person, as a teenager, I think, because of his gift. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah,
that's what I'm saying.
Aiko, what do you think about that?
That's what I felt as well. Mm-hmm. Like, for some reason, I don't know why he was exactly chosen. Maybe it was because he's young, but he always had the gift to begin with. So it was just like, if you want to redeem yourself, then here, we're going to send you back, but this is what you're going to have to do.
Yeah, see, I'm not saying you guys are wrong, because that was a question. I've seen this movie, you know, multiple times, which we'll talk about later. But as I was watching it recently, preparing for this show, that became a head scratcher for me. For the first time, I was like, wait a minute, why did he survive? And I was like, my conclusion was just that he said I was dead. You know, technically I was dead for 2 minutes officially. And we've heard that many a times, you know, in real life and from in the movies, where somebody technically, you know, they flatline and then through whatever technique, you know, their heart starts beating again. That's kind of what I got from it. I thought they brought him back, you know, the doctors brought him back or whatever. But again, I'm not saying you guys are wrong. I'm just saying that's kind of the.
You just never looked at it that way?
Yeah, I never looked at it that way. I never questioned it until recently. But then when I thought about it, I was like, well, maybe the doctors just brought him back. So it was just chance that he got, you know, it was luck he got a second chance. But that's maybe you guys are right.
I don't know. I don't think I ever thought about it either. But now listening to your version, I'm like, I guess I have to go back and watch it again.
Again. Lucky you.
I've seen it so many times.
Ditto. Well, all right, go ahead, Arthur. I'm sorry.
Well, the one thing that I liked, and I really should rephrase that, because it wasn't just one thing that I liked about this movie. I found it highly entertaining.
Right.
I know I'm characterizing it as weird, but that's what it is. It is weird.
Right.
In terms of both the visuals and the depictions of certain... historically biblical characters, and I'm gonna get to Gabriel in just a second. But when we first meet John, I mean, action happens like right out of the gate, so the film moves really well. I don't remember encountering a slow period in the film for me. But when we see him, he is presented as an exorcist. Really?
Yes.
And he exorcises this demon that has possessed a little girl. And this you get the idea that he's done this before, but there's something about this exorcism that was different for him.
Right.
And that begins his journey to find out. And this is where I kind of got lost a little bit, but I got helped out a little bit later in the film. But what I didn't understand at the time in the beginning of the film was, okay, I'm an exorcist. I got this demon out, but apparently the demon was a little extra aggressive and it looked like he was actually trying to get onto the planet, cross the plane
right.
that he's not supposed to cross. And he goes to seek out answers as to why this is happening, but also warn someone that this is happening. And the person that he goes to speak to about warning and explanation is the angel, the archangel Gabriel,
right?
Who is played by Tilda Swinton, who is it was actually kind of cool because Gabriel, the way she played Gabriel, was very androgynous.
Mm-hmm.
And that I was okay with that, primarily because a lot of the historical Western European depictions in art of God and his angels, you know, they're always very beautiful. They were beautiful men, right? So Tilda is here with much shorter hair. She didn't go, you know, full baldy like she did in Doctor Strange, but she's wearing a suit and she's carrying herself in a very, you know, Bowie-esque Thin White Duke persona. If
Absolutely.
All my music snobs people know mm-hmm. about that reference.
I don't think did they ever refer to her. And Aiko, you've seen as many times as I have, so probably maybe more. So let you tell me, did they ever refer to her as a her? I think that Gabriel was almost non-binary in this
yeah,
film.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
They didn't refer to her as a they, but I'm saying I don't think they ever said her or she.
Exactly.
No, because I was actually checking for that. Mm. Gabriel was always referred to by the name Gabriel.
Right.
Or what about Balthazar? Did they ever refer to him as a him? I think they did, didn't they? I think at one point he says, "What is he doing here?" So I think he says he.
Yeah, yeah. He was presented as and referred to in a more masculine form. Mm.
Yeah.
Okay.
Masculine. Because
it would have been interesting if all the angels / demons / half breeds, as Constantine calls them, would have been, you know, androgynous or non-binary. That would have been really interesting.
Yeah, it's true.
But I'm sorry, I interrupted you, Arthur. Go ahead.
No, well, this one thing I didn't pick up on is even as he was trying to, you know, alert, get more information about, mm-hmm. what's up with Satan and these demons, because they, you know, they're going a little extra hard trying to get into, you know, the earth plane.
Mm-hmm.
I still wasn't sure if he was working in league with or because. The way that Keanu plays the character, he plays the character with such disdain about everything.
Mm, very
he's
cynical.
He's callous. He's a chain smoker. Right. Like you say, very cynical.
Yeah.
And it took me a while before I realized that he was actually trying to redeem himself, even in the midst of all that.
Well, and to me, though, that's one of the most interesting things about this film. First of all, the cynicism that you see, that's directly from the comic. I didn't read a lot of Hellblazer comics, but I did mm-hmm. read a few, and I was aware of Constantine, and that's definitely Constantine's character. You know, very cynical, very world weary, just a smart ass, kind of an asshole, really.
Mm-hmm.
But a likable asshole, you know. And so I felt that part of Keanu's representation of him, the way he played him, I thought that was very on point. But in terms of redemption, what was interesting to me with this film is that it very much clearly starts with redemption, mm-hmm. in the sense that when he early on, when he goes to see Gabriel, he tells her like point blank, like it's not like he's hiding the fact of what he's doing. He's like, I'm trying to save enough people, send enough of these motherfuckers back to hell, these demons back to hell, mm-hmm. so I can get to heaven. You know, that's because I, you know, later on we find out, of course, you know, the whole story that he tried to kill himself. And that's why when he eventually dies, he's definitely going to hell, according to Catholic religion / mythology, however you view it. He, you know, that's what his, he understands that's what's going to happen. And so it was interesting to me that from jump, when he goes to, you know, perform that exorcism, you find out not too much later, it's not out of the goodness of his heart necessarily. He's trying to do enough to redeem himself in order to go to heaven. And to answer your question, Arthur, that first scene, yeah, he did see something. Because he tells his homeboy, the priest, he tells, what's his name, Aiko? The priest, Hennessy. He tells Hennessy, look, that was not a normal exorcism, you know, and that demon was trying to cross over. It wasn't just politely whispering into the ear of that girl or trying to possess her, you know, subtly like demons do. No, he's trying to cross over into this plane of existence, in which Hennessy is like, that's impossible, you know. And so, yeah, that kickstarts the journey. But at the beginning of this journey, even when he's seeking answers, he's not seeking answers because he's a superhero or something like that. And, you know, he wants to do good. He's seeking answers clearly for his own redemption.
But he also feels somewhat resigned during the whole thing, too. Like, this may not work. Like, there's always like that cynicism that you're talking about, like that he's kind of like, this, you know, I can try and do whatever it is possible, but this just I might end up back in that place anyway.
You kind of get the sense from him that he has a very it's not just cynicism, it's almost apocalyptic, you know what I'm saying? He has just a very dire outlook, and it's like, no matter what happens or what I do, we're all damned, you know, and especially me. And then you get the scene early on where he finds out, you know, that he's dying, that he has cancer and, lung cancer. And, you know, he only has a few months. So it's like, now has he done enough? He's like, have I done enough to get to heaven? Cause I only got a few months left. And that's so the clock starts ticking. You know, and then all of a sudden all this stuff is jumping off. So there's a lot of things at play here. But what I found really interesting, because, again, I've seen this movie a lot, but now, of course, watching it for this show, it was like I'm watching it through strictly through a redemption lens. And it was just like, wow, Christianity, amongst other religions, major and minor, one of, if not the major theme of these religions is do enough here so you can get to heaven. You know, so it's like redemption. And Gabriel says it later on. She tells Constantine to his face, you humans have the ultimate gift. You can go out and just F up tremendously. And all you have to do is seek absolution. Seek, and he will grant you redemption. And then, you know, you can get to heaven. You're not even worthy of that. You know, that's, Gabriel is insane. Like, John calls her insane. And she literally, he, they, whatever, is literally insane. Because she's like, I'm just going to wreck everything, unleash hell. And then we're going to see if y'all are really worthy of this level of redemption. So redemption is just like, I mean, it's this movie is soaked in it, like literally.
As crazy as she might be, like her methods might be a little insane, but she does make very valid points. Like, it's like you get to act a fool this whole entire lifetime, and then at the end of the game be like, okay, I'm so sorry, I repent, whatever, and it's like, here you go. And, you know, having to earn it like that, I wasn't mad at how of what she thought. It's just the process itself is like, okay, girl, like, or sorry, Gabriel, okay, that. pull back.
Do you think, Aiko, that her stance was almost a commentary by the writers and filmmakers on the redemption ethos of Christianity? Do you think that was commentary on that? Because it is a very, on the face of it, it does feel very neat and tucked in, you know, like, oh, well, all you can just say this, and, you know, here's the rule, and just do this, and you're all good. So it feels very safe and kind of like very convenient. Do you think it was a commentary on that?
I think it is a commentary. And I think the thing is like, you know, I'm not sure how different Christianity and Catholicism are, because obviously they lean heavy on Catholicism in the film. But one of the things that, you know, I've had friends that are Catholic, and it always just seems like, okay, well, I guess Christianity too. Like, you do all kinds of stuff during the week, and then Sunday you show up and I'm so sorry, I'll lead a better life. And that's supposed to be it. And I've, you know, I think about you know, some of these abusive priests and stuff like that, mm-hmm. and how they just mm-hmm. to keep rocking, even though it's just like, yo, but you've been evil for how mm-hmm. long? And just because you decide to repent, like, no, I think you should earn it. And maybe that's what purgatory is. I don't know. But it always is presented like, if you just say whatever, then here you go. You get to cross over into heaven, mm-hmm. the pearly gates, whatever you want to call it. So I do think it's a commentary on like, yeah, you should earn it. There should be more than just like, I'm sorry, I fucked up and that's it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think, and just looking at it, because Christianity, Catholic, blah, 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 none of us are theologians, but I think
right,
that
exactly.
Catholic, Catholicism as a Christian faith, mm-hmm. one of the many Christian faiths, there are a lot of rules and there are a lot of, this is not a commentary. I'm not meaning to insult anybody's faith.
Right, right.
Yeah. But if you look at a lot of the major religions and a lot of major offshoots of those religions, you can say that Catholicism and even Islam and some of the other ones, there is a very kind of like, okay, X, Y, and Z. Here's what you do. You say this, you do that. This is very, it's very cut and dried as far as like, this is, you know, these are the rules. You follow these rules, you do this, X, Y. I could definitely see the filmmakers going kind of almost subtly giving a commentary on the fact that, like Aiko just said, mm-hmm. is it that simple? You know what I'm saying? Even though it is complicated, I'm not trying to simplify any of these religions, but is it that simple, or is it more, there's more shades of gray, and the gray is what we see in what Constantine is, you know, mm-hmm. and the fact that he, you know, exists between both of these things, or Papa Midnight to that extent. And there's all this gray that nobody is really talking about or nobody's really taking a look at. So I could kind of see that. And I'm glad you said that about Gabriel, because there's some insanity there, you know, mm-hmm. because she expects God to have her back. You know, it's like, yeah, I'm going to unleash hell. You know what I'm saying? And it's like, I'm like, let the devil's son take over earth. Right. And that's going to prove me worthy in God's eyes, you know. So that's part of her her ideology as well. So there is a level of you know, disturbance there. But I like your point, Aiko, about her, you know, her commentary. There may be some validity in that.
Listen, a lot of people who go on crazy rants and stuff, there's always some little truth nuggets in there. Like, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? Like, I think Gabriel, that was a very valid point. Like, you know, for example, it's not the same in Buddhism. Like, you don't get to like just decide like, oh, okay, you know, they've been checking off the marks since day one. So it's just like, it's just very interesting. Like you said, there's a lot of rules and I don't know them. I don't even profess to know anything about any of this, but it's just, it is very interesting. Mm-hmm. I mean, Theodore Kaczynski was out of his mind, but you know, you read his manifesto, there's some little stuff in there that I'm like, well, you know, mm-hmm. some mm-hmm. truth in there.
Thanos.
Listen, I actually agree with Thanos to an extent. Again, crazy about how you do it, but Thanos is right. The Matrix. Look, Agent Smith, when he's like, humans are a virus. Absolutely. Right. Mm-hmm. There's some truth to that.
Mm-hmm. Especially so.
Now, if I could introduce Mammon, because that's central to what we've been talking around, but is what the ultimate plot mover is. So Mammon, we find out, and we actually find this out early, but Mammon is the Antichrist's son, the son of Lucifer.
Right.
And we learn of him without identifying him by name, because toward the beginning of the film in Mexico, the tip of a spear is found wrapped in a Nazi flag that had been buried at some kind of site that was excavated in Mexico.
Right.
Long story short, the worker that finds this spear tip becomes infused with the spirit of Mammon and becomes a vessel to then go and release Mammon into the earth plane. And interestingly enough, the spear tip is the tip of the spear that killed Jesus. Not the crucifixion itself, but the fact that he was stabbed. He was impaled with the tip of the spear. Mm. And we learn that Gabriel is actually in cahoots to release Mammon and release hell on earth, which is what we've been talking about. Which brings us to Rachel Is it Rachel Weisz or Rachel Weisz?
Weisz.
Weisz?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, damn, I was all the way wrong. Okay. So Rachel Weisz's character, she's actually playing two roles. Her sister.
Isabel.
Isabel?
Yeah.
Isabel's the sister who is the twin of Angela.
Right.
Angela is an LA police detective and has learned that Isabel, her twin, has committed suicide by jumping off the top of the hospital that she's been committed to. And it's just weird how this kind of like goes. but basically we learn that Isabel as well as Angela are seers like Keanu is.
Right.
But Angela hid that fact after seeing how her sister Isabel was, you know, basically persecuted, declared insane, and hospitalized. Angela didn't want to step up and say, I see these things too. I see what's up also. Isabel is not crazy, because she didn't want to presumably find herself with the same fate mm-hmm. as Isabel. And so to fight these demons, to get this all done, Angela, in kind of a roundabout way, teams up with John Constantine to then stop all this shit from happening. So with Angela on the scene, we find that there are actually two redemptive story arcs. One is Constantine himself, mm-hmm. who is on the clock, wants to get into heaven because he knows what's waiting for him in hell. And Angela, who is guilt-ridden over leaving her sister out there, wants to redeem herself and stop this from happening also. And she knows that Constantine is the only one that can actually help her, because Constantine sees the same things she sees.
Right.
I think it should be said, though, that she is skeptical at first, because when she first, for Angela, she just, of course, she doesn't believe that her sister, again, coming back to the redemption theme or major, like, you know, pillar of Catholicism in particular, she doesn't believe her sister would have committed suicide, because right. there's no redemption from suicide. You right. commit suicide, you go to hell. That's it. That's how, right. that's according to the Catholic faith or the Catholic doctrine. That's how that works. So she's like, she wouldn't do that. So when she first goes to Constantine, she has some sense. Cause she mm-hmm. is, it's funny, man. It's like, it's very similar to how, many people are when it comes to religion. It's like, we believe these things that, you know, are presented to us, in books or, you know, told to us happened a long time ago. But if something happens in real time, then it's like, come on, man. You know, if somebody tells you something like, yeah, I saw, you know, somebody walking on the wall or whatever, like, nah, that's not, that doesn't happen. You know? So Angela, I think, is a good representation of that, because when she first goes to see Constantine, it's just because people at the station, you know, her at her police precinct told her about him. She has mm-hmm. some notion that he has some idea of the occult. And yeah. she's just like, I found this information. You know, I saw this on this videotape. Shit is weird. Like Arthur is saying, shit is just weird right now. You know something. So just, you know, I'm a detective. I'm starting with you. You know, tell me what's, you know, what you know. But she doesn't believe, because when they get right. attacked by those demons, she's just like, she's like, this dude is out. You know, when he starts talking about things and starts telling her about how it works, you know,
yeah,
they, you know, heaven and hell, you know, God and the devil made this deal and blah, blah, blah. And did it. She's like, whatever, you know what I'm saying? She's like, so it takes a while for her to kind of believe really what's going on.
But see, that's the problem I have, because she sees stuff too.
Right.
She saw the demons attacking. She saw him basically go to hell. You know, he comes back from hell with her sister's hospital. What is that thing?
Right. Dude smoking and yeah, the yeah, hospital yeah. tag and yeah. stuff like that. Right.
Yeah. So she knows she's starting to believe, but
Angela waits a long ass time to, it's like, if I meet you, mm-hmm. right. And we're talking and everything. And, you know, and I like, you know what, man, I've been hearing all this stuff about, you know, podcasts from home. I don't believe none of that shit. It don't make no damn sense. And then you show me how it's done. And then I'm like, yeah, well, you know what? I actually have a gear at the house. I knew I can do that shit too. Right. So she waits a long time. So that's right. why it's kind of disingenuous. And, you know, initially it kind of broke down for me. Meaning, I was totally with her and trying to be like, look, my sister wouldn't do this. Constantine, you got to help me because mm-hmm. there's some weird stuff and I know this, that, and the other, blah, blah, blah. And then to the point where she actually wants to, you know, take the next step mm-hmm. to and actually team up with Constantine, you know, to stop this from happening.
Now, let me ask you guys this, though. That step that she takes, to me, represents her redemption, her need for redemption, because her need, mm-hmm. Angela's need for redemption, to me, is more complicated than Constantine's, as crazy as that sounds. Constantine's is pretty much cut and dry. Mm-hmm. I did this. I'm going to hell. I need to do this to get a shot at going to heaven. Whereas right. with Angela, she's almost seeking redemption for two people. For her sister,
right?
Because her sister committed suicide, and she's like, "No, she wouldn't do that."
Vindicate her sister,
yeah,
right.
Yeah.
So she needs to get her right. So she needs to get her sister redeemed in the eyes of every, or the eyes of not even the law, or the eyes of the priest. You know, the priest that she goes see. So right. basically, in the eyes of the Catholic Church,
right?
Right.
But then she's also seeking redemption for herself because she feels like she let her sister down.
Yeah.
You mm-hmm. know, and I didn't believe her. You know, and I sent her to this place and I just, you know, whatever. So Angela's redemptive arc to me is a little bit more, even more interesting than Constantine's because she's seeking redemption for two people.
And
how do you guys feel about that?
Well, the other thing about Angela is even though, I mean, her initial motivation is to get her, you know, a proper burial because she's, you know, Catholic and they're like, sorry, right. like she committed suicide. But the other thing is like that part of when they're in the hospital room and she says she denied it for so long that she stopped seeing. But at the same time, she's got a sister who's used to constantly telling her what she sees. So maybe mm-hmm. it wasn't mm-hmm. that difficult for her to kind of roll with Constantine and say, okay, this shit is weird and sounds crazy, but I'm going to still keep following you in this. As she, as you guys have talked about, just like starts to recognize what's always been there. So maybe that's the thing. I just don't understand how a bunch of demons with wings are flapping over and you vomit after you see everything and you still aren't like, I'm a believer. Like,
well, in all fairness, mm-hmm. I'm a devil's, no pun intended, but I'm a devil's advocate for yes. her for a minute. And side note, I really like Rachel Weisz in this role. And
yeah,
I thought she actually, I don't follow her career very closely. So maybe she has played other characters like this, but I believed her as a, not as an action hero, so to speak, but in that action type mm-hmm. role, you know, mm-hmm. she fit that role mm-hmm. really well. And I thought the same thing about her that I thought about Jennifer Lopez in Out of Sight. You know, when I saw, mm-hmm. not that these movies are comparable, but when I saw Jennifer Lopez in Out of Sight, I was like, man, she should play that kind of role
exactly.
all the time.
She
killed that. And she never really played that kind of role again until she did a television show years later. But yeah, that's just a side note. But anyway, just the devil's advocate for Angela in this movie for a second. It's hard. That type of stuff, it's almost like your mind I can see your mind shutting down. Like,
that's
no,
fair.
That mm-hmm. did yeah. not mm-hmm. just happen. You know what I'm saying? Because it's mm-hmm. like, that's completely out of the realm of your experience and your understanding. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Even though you went to Catholic school, you've read books, you know, you've heard all these things. And part of you, if not all of you, believes those things. To see it in real life, you know, being attacked in the middle of the street by demons, winged demons, that could shock somebody and be like, hell no, that didn't just happen. It had to be something else. You know, mm-hmm. it was mm-hmm. a bat. I was, you know, maybe I'm high. I don't know. Something happened. mm-hmm. I'm just throwing it out there because I'm kind of, for the most part, I'm with you guys. Like after that, you should kind of be like, yo.
But that is
Constantine,
fair.
Tell me what's up, you know.
Yeah. But that's so fair.
Here's what I need help with. And I need to ask a very rhetorical question, right? So, you know, what are the obstacles and or the opposition between the characters and redemption? Now, probably like all the demons and shit, right? but more directly, we learn that Gabriel is actually an obstacle.
Mm-hmm.
And we also have this other character, Balthazar,
right.
mm-hmm.
who's an obstacle as well. And for most of the movie, I'm looking at Gabriel being even in conflict with, even if some real tension between Gabriel and Constantine.
Mm-hmm.
But Gabriel is ultimate. Like, Gabriel would, it would be, I think it would be nice for Gabriel if Constantine won. mm-hmm. right? Like that's how that was sort of like how I understood their you know their fragile alliance.
Mm. Well, he needed Constantine. He was playing Constantine like a chess piece. He needed him to do certain things in order to get you know to really to get Angela. You know, because Constantine had no idea at first who you know her connection.
Right.
To all this.
That's yeah. right. Right. Yeah. But Balthazar, the character Balthazar, who seemed to be an agent of
Lucifer.
Yeah,
I'm sorry, Balthazar, not Gabriel. Balthazar. Yeah.
you know, Balthazar being an agent of Lucifer seemed to be a more direct aggressor.
Shit started.
But what I didn't understand.
right.
but what I didn't understand was the character Captain Midnight.
Captain Midnight.
And when that dude's name?
Who's Captain Midnight, bro?
It's oh, Papa Midnight.
Papa.
Oh, man.
I didn't understand Papa Midnight's role.
He had no role. That was his whole point.
Yeah, he was Switzerland.
His whole point was neutrality. You explain it, Aiko. I think you got it.
He basically could. He was Switzerland. He could play both sides. Somebody could come in and ask for him to do mm-hmm. him a favor on, you know, let's say Balthasar's side. But then Constantine could also come in, and he actually had battled hell before, but I forgot how. Mm-hmm. But he had done, he was a witch doctor and he had battled hell before. So he was another one who could see things. And because of his gift, he was able to help people facilitate whatever it is that they wanted to do. But he was always firm that like, you can't cross over planes. Like you can't mess around. I think.
Mm. Oh, right? Isaac. So that's why he was so resistant when Constantine wanted to use the electric chair
yeah.
to cross the plane of earth and hell.
You get the sense very strongly that Papa Midnight and Constantine were comrades, you know, and previously, and that they had battled together.
Mm-hmm.
Or at the very least, you get the sense that Constantine was aware of the legend of Papa Midnight. Because what's the kid later? Chaz.
Shia LaBeouf's character.
Papa Midnight. Yeah. He's Shia LaBeouf. He's like, he's a legend, you know. And Constantine mm-hmm. says, you know, once you held off, you know, 30 Ashgar, whatever Ashgar, I guess, I don't know if they're like stormtroopers or something, but he was like, you held mm-hmm. off 30 Ashgar, you know? So it's like, he's Papa Midnight is legend, but at some point he, and I don't know his backstory, I'm sure it's in the comics, but at some point he decided to just believe in the balance.
Right.
You know, there's a detente between, you know, heaven and hell. And that means that demons, like Papa Midnight says, demons stay in hell, angels stay in heaven, and they don't interfere. None of them cross the plane into mm-hmm. earth. And except for these half breeds, as Constantine calls them. So, but he believes in that balance. Like Aiko said, he's Switzerland. And that's kind of also a familiar trope. The first one that comes to mind, the balance that comes to mind is, obviously with Star Wars, Arthur, you know, the balance, or both of you guys, the balance between, you know, the dark side, the light side,
yeah.
mm-hmm. Michael Moorcock's, Elric series and Eternal Champion series from back in the 60s and 70s, where it was the balance between law and chaos. So mm-hmm. that's a familiar trope mm-hmm. in some of this type mm-hmm. of fantasy mm-hmm. where, you know, you have that balance. And then there are those people who are neutral and just like, look, instead of trying to vanquish evil or trying to vanquish good, just let the balance exist. It is a detente, you know, it is exactly that. So it's working, let it live. What I found interesting though, between, Papa Midnight, Constantine and, Angela, or more specifically between Angela and Constantine, Arthur, you asked about what are the obstacles between what they're trying to do to get to the redemption and what it was keeping them from that redemptive journey or that redemptive goal. To me, it was stated very clearly by Gabriel early mm-hmm. in the film. She said mm-hmm. it. Mm-hmm. He said mm-hmm. it. They said it in that scene at the church. Do you remember Aiko when they met? Do you remember what, you know what I'm talking about?
They were, when he was over by the fireplace and Rachel was talking to, I'm sorry, Rachel, Angela was talking to the other priest.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. And Gabriel said, having that conversation with Constantine, Gabriel said, because Constantine at that point was like, I'm dying of cancer. What the fuck mm-hmm. is going on? I've done enough. Mm-hmm. You know, am I going to go to heaven? Mm-hmm. Tell me, mm-hmm. you know. Mm-hmm. And Gabriel's like, you know, everything you do for yourself.
Yeah.
You know, you're selfish. And then okay, Gabriel right. says, point blank says, you know, you don't believe. And Constantine's, hell yeah, I believe. I'm, you know, it's like, I deal
I'm
with
out
these
here
things.
Doing
you know,
the work.
So, yeah, I believe. Uh-huh. And she's like, no, 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 no. You know You don't believe. You know. There's a difference between knowing and believing. And that is the obstacle for Constantine in particular, and I think for Angela as well, but really for Constantine, between where he's at and getting the redemption that he seeks, is belief.
Yeah, that's
right. Belief that it's possible, or belief?
Belief in the Christian doctrine, specifically Catholicism, but belief in the fact that what he's doing, the deeds that he's doing, are what he should be doing,
right?
Because that's the right thing to do.
Exactly.
Belief in Gabriel says God has a plan for all of us.
Yeah.
But deep down, Constantine doesn't believe that.
Yeah.
You know, he doesn't believe in that. So she's like, no, believe in the Father. Gabriel calls God Father later. She said, believe, you know, and so that's what she's telling to Constantine. You know of his existence. You know of the existence of all these things. You don't believe in him.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And I don't mean to you know, simplify it or make it reductive, but at the end of the day, it comes down to the core, you know, the seed of religion, you know, do you believe?
Yeah. Do you have faith?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a really good point.
So toward the end of the film, the climax of the film, when it's revealed that Gabriel was actually behind trying to raise the son of Lucifer onto the earth plane to unleash hell on earth. And Lucifer himself comes onto earth to claim the soul of Constantine. And throughout the film, it's always said, you know, you're the one that Lucifer would come himself to come, you know, to come and claim.
Because you skated once.
I saw Constantine presented as the Christ character, like Jesus himself.
Yeah.
Basically. That it was through Constantine's death that humanity would be redeemed. And you actually see at a point Constantine ascend toward heaven, but Lucifer snatches him back down, you know, to, you know, try to finish him off. What I wasn't certain of, if Constantine actually redeemed himself. And the reason why was because during the scene where we see Constantine, who's been, you know, been beaten to all hell, you know, his Angela's in bad shape, you know, Shia's character, he's dead and all this. Basically, I see him ascend toward heaven and I'm like, okay, he did the work. He's redeemed. He's being accepted. But when Lucifer snatches him back down, and at the end of the film, Keanu, he's still on Earth, it threw in a question of whether he actually did achieve redemption.
Well, for context.
And was that ascension, you know, for the benefit of throwing Lucifer and Gabriel off? I don't know.
But for context, he basically knew, he tried to commit, he slit his wrist again because he was trying to trade Isabel's life for his own. And that was the big thing. That's and so because he did that, that's why, you know what I mean? Like Lucifer was like, oh, no. Like when you said he snatched him back down and all that other stuff, but that was what he did. And that was like the selfless thing, like to finally believe, like, okay, you can take me and please allow her the grace to ascend to heaven. You know what I mean? Based off of whatever. So by doing that act,
he was trading souls.
Yeah, exactly. And he was trying to also save Angela's character as well. So by doing all that, he actually was selfless for once. It wasn't about him. It was about those two other people that, you know, he wanted to help. And that was the first time, I guess I would say, maybe the first time, I don't know, but I'm just saying like that was his intention about all of it. And that's why Lucifer came down, because it's like, oh, this is the second time that you committed suicide. The first time you skated, but this time I'm coming to collect you because I've been waiting for however long to do this.
Yeah, Arthur, you were completely confused.
Absolutely.
So, I think and first of all, shout out to Peter, what's how you pronounce my man's last name? Stormare.
Oh my God, Stormare. Exceptional.
He killed it as Lucifer. You know, he was, I mean, what was he on screen for maybe 7-8 minutes, maybe? I don't know how long, but he stole it. That was and again, you know, Tilda Swinton killed it as Gabriel. There was a lot of good, you know, performances.
Father Hennessy, yeah.
And it's funny, and we'll touch on it later because I got more things to talk about. Because Arthur, you're right. This is a weird film. This is a weird movie. And
I did like, side note, I did like the fact that Lucifer showed up in white.
Yes.
Yeah, all white. Yeah, all white.
Because he shows up, you know, as light to deceive. But go ahead.
But yeah, there's a lot of weird components of the movie. And Keanu Reeves's portrayal, this is a complete side note we'll come back to. Matter of fact, we'll just come back to that. Just remind me to talk about the way he portrayed this character. I thought it was very interesting. But yeah, first of all, he summons Gabriel to the light, you know, after Chaz gets killed, and poor Chaz.
Yeah.
Poor Chaz.
Yeah.
Chaz wanted was to be like Constantine. That's all he wanted.
They did him dirty.
To be like Constantine. Mm-hmm.
They did him dirty.
Yeah, they did him dirty. In the deleted, there's a deleted scene. I don't know if you guys know, there's a deleted scene, where Constantine goes to a, cemetery later and he sees Chaz is an angel, you know. Oh. So he sees Chaz. Yeah. But I'm glad they cut it, because it didn't fit with the tone of the rest of the film. But anyway, so yeah, he summons Gabriel, and then he, you know, as a last ditch effort, because Gabriel tells him, you know, Gabriel's plan, and so that's when he realizes all the puzzle pieces come together at that point, you know, for Constantine. This is a detective movie. Mm-hmm. You know, this is a detective at its core. This is a detective movie. So that was the scene where everything comes together. And so, you know, with everything, with, you know, he has no other cards left to play. And so he slits his wrist, knowing that not only is it, I think at that point, it's not just about the sacrifice. He knows that will get Lucifer up there.
Yeah.
Because he knows that Lucifer, as Papa Midnight said before, is kind of widely known that once Constantine goes, Lucifer is going to come up there and get him himself. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. He's like, it's almost like he's the one that got away.
Yeah.
You know, so he slits his wrist, knowing that he can get Lucifer up there, and then he can tell Lucifer the plan, you know, because...
Okay,
basically,
the chronology now.
Mm-hmm. The plan involves little Lucifer basically, you know, taking over Earth and almost usurping his dad,
yep.
You know, and basically becoming, you know, the HNIC, basically, you
right.
know. So
mm-hmm.
he's like, you know, yeah, Gabriel is out there doing something with your son, and they're going to do this. And, you know, yeah, you need to go handle that, you know. And of course, Lucifer goes out there, handles it, finds out that Gabriel is not protected by God anymore. And basically, you know, makes her into a mortal.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But to your point, where you guys are absolutely right is, yeah, once he comes back in the room and he's like, okay, John, time to go. You know, you mine now. Mm-hmm. I got gotcha, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. I love the scene where he starts dragging him.
Yes.
And the floor just starts turning. It's like a wave, and it just catches him. And it's like, and Peter Stormare looks back like, what the fuck, you know, what's going on? Like, hold on, mm-hmm. come on. Mm-hmm. He's dragging him. And it's like, he realizes, oh shit, this motherfucker committed a selfless act.
Mm-hmm.
Perfect. You know, so mm-hmm. Arthur, to your point, you were right. His selfless act is what got him his redemption. I think he was absolutely redeemed because he got to go to heaven.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Lucifer, you know, threw a monkey wrench in it by curing him of cancer, pulling the cancer out of his lungs.
That's what he was doing.
Yeah.
I didn't know what that was.
Yeah.
Were you watching this movie with both eyes
yeah.
open?
Yeah. I'm sitting there watching. I'm like, what the fuck is this? And I didn't understand what he was doing. I thought he was actually infusing Constantine with, you know,
no, he tells him this. He's speaking to God, because God has the power, basically. And it's funny because in this movie, and just like in so many other stories of similar stories, the devil himself is a pawn.
Right.
You know, it's like he's very clearly a pawn of God. And so everything that the devil does, God is allowing him to do. But mm-hmm. so God allows him, because the devil's like, no, 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 this one's mine. Like, I want this one. And so if I have to cure him of cancer and let him live, you know, in order for you not to take him, that's what I'm going to do, which was probably God's plan all along.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? It's like, I'm going to let you go ahead and do that so you can feel good about yourself. So yes, Arthur, he pulled the cancer out of his lungs just so Constantine could live, and hopefully the devil is hoping he'll F up enough again that he'll eventually go to hell.
Got it. That's exactly why he remained on Earth
exactly.
at the end of the film.
Exactly.
Exactly. So
see, this is the whole reason
this
for
why we have this
snobs
show.
On film. The whole reason.
We could have just had
for
some
me
text
to understand
messages.
This stuff.
We could have just texted. We could have had a phone call. You know what I'm saying? We had
no,
to
no,
have
no,
the
no,
whole
no,
world
no.
listen.
That's funny.
But yeah, so to me, and I'll let you guys, and Aiko, you can give your opinion, but I think he absolutely redeemed himself.
I agree. 100%. I agree.
Now, the question is, did Angela and the sister gets redemption because of Constantine?
Right.
Which she should have got. It wasn't her fault. You know, she was possessed by demons, mm-hmm. or whatever. Wasn't her fault. But what do you guys think about Angela? Did she get enough redemption because she didn't help her sister?
I mean, yeah. And the fact that she, you know, she got possessed, all kinds of stuff. She went through, at the end, she really went through it in order to try and do whatever possible to save her sister. So I do feel like, you know, she finally, I guess, I don't know what the term would be, like, showed up and just really tried to honor everything that happened to her and tried to make it right so that her sister, I mean, I think, I'm assuming her and Constantine, that was the plan, is that she knew that Constantine was trying to save her sister's soul? Or is that just not...
You mean at some point, are you saying, yeah, did Angela start to believe that?
Yeah, at some point that she knew that Constantine was trying to help her sister in some
way? Yeah, I think at the point where they went back to the hospital where she, to basically the scene of the crime.
Yeah, where she... Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
And mm-hmm. he's telling her, there's something you're not... you know something. You know, and he's right. shaking. He's like, tell me. She's like, I don't know anything. I think at that point, she started to believe. And then, of course, shortly after that, Beeman dies.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, this, and again, this is, I mean, you guys are on me all the time. And Jay is on me a lot about, you know, my non-affinity towards horror films. Yeah. And there was some horror elements, obviously, yeah. in this. But much like The X-Files, for me, the detective element overrode the horror part. So it made it
override or abstract? Because I think
override.
I see what you're saying, because it's almost like I feel that it's like, you know, I'm telling you what you feel, but I almost feel like it's the abstraction of it, mm-hmm. like Silence of the Lambs.
Right.
Yeah, see, that wasn't enough of an abstraction for me. Like, never watching that again. I'm good on that, man. That wasn't an overriding abstraction. Yeah.
But it's interesting, so, they also add, there's a lightness to the film, though, like, even though there are horrific moments, like the Father mm-hmm. Hennessy moment, that really, you know, I was like, dang, why'd they do that to him? Like, the way mm-hmm. that he was on the ground and, you know what I mean? I really felt for him because he's just trying mm-hmm. to drown out the voices. And so, mm-hmm. But there's still a lightness to the film where it's like you don't necessarily feel like, okay, this is so scary. There's some tense scenes, but like, you know, there's some, I don't know, it's kind of, it's fun in an odd way.
Yeah. This might be a great seed to what you're talking about, Isaac, earlier about Keanu and how he portrays Constantine. Because yes. to me, yeah. it was Keanu that made it light.
Yeah.
Right.
Based on his reaction to all of it.
But before we get to there, what I was about to say about Beeman, his death is, you know, like that. That's the one scene that I generally look away from, like that bee climbing up underneath his skin. Like that just like, that just makes me itch. So I don't watch that. But anyway, I think to answer your question, I think that's kind of that area of the movie is where mm-hmm. Angela really starts to believe, okay, mm-hmm. I need to help him do whatever is necessary to save my sister's soul. Mm-hmm. So when she they're in the office building and she goes to, cause she can't just sit in the car.
And she left the amulet.
I had no problem with her getting out the car. I did have a problem with her leaving the amulet. and she goes to help Constantine and then she's taken. I think she's full. She's 100% in there, but she's 100% in. But my question to you, Aiko, cause you brought it up, is that her commitment at that point, is that because she's trying just to save her sister's soul or because she also feels like I didn't do enough before, so I need to redeem myself right now?
I mean,
because that's kind of what I got.
Yeah, and I agree with you. I think it's a little bit of everything, because also the fact that she's like, she's not letting Constantine down either. She's like, I'm not going to let you battle this by yourself. Like, she's also, you know, at the end of the day, she's still a detective, a cop, like, whatever oaths they sign and everything else. But, mm-hmm. like, you know, she's going to help him. And she's mm-hmm. going to, and by helping him, it helps his sister, but it also helps her fulfill the role that she's taken on as a detective and like making sure that you just don't leave people by the wayside when they need help.
Mm-hmm. Well, I do want to wrap this up and get to our segment, but I do think that Angela was trying to get a 2-for-1 deal.
Yes.
That through her sacrifice in redeeming her sister, by proxy, she would redeem herself.
Yeah.
So yeah, I won't go so far to say that she's disingenuous so much as, you know, she was.
It's her last shot. It's her last shot. Her last chance to redeem.
So she was trying to go
herself
big.
By saving her sister.
Yes. Yeah, right.
Because she didn't do enough before. I come back to the the twin redemptive arcs of this film, and really it's almost like a try, because you get Angela has two redemptive arcs between her and her sister. But I think that Constantine's is just much more clear, much more cut and dried. Although he can't see it, you know, at the beginning of the film, he's not, because he doesn't believe, you know, he's just, he's almost so doctrinated and so, you know, ABC that he can't, to Gabriel's point, he's not looking between the letters and seeing, okay, in that gray area that you actually live in, you need to believe in the things that are happening. You know, you need to believe in the deeds that you're doing. Yeah. You're sending demons back to hell, but you're just doing it for yourself, you know? So his redemption was much more clear to me, even though it wasn't clear to him. But I enjoyed watching it from the redemptive point of view for this viewing, and just, you know, clearly looking at that, because in all the times I've seen this movie before, I was aware of that, but it really played out in a different way to me this time. And, you know, especially looking at it through the lens of Catholicism or Christianity in general, and just realizing, wow, so much of, you know, religious faith is built around our need for redemption, and almost to the point where it's like, we need that road, that path, you know, we need that ABC, we need that checkbox, you know what I'm saying? Cause it's like to do it the other way is just too complicated. So it's like, I just need to know, okay, what do I need to do to be redeemed? And like Aiko said at the beginning of the episode, you kind of empathize with Gabriel a little bit. Cause it's like, why is it that easy for y'all? You know, it's so easy for you humans. So I enjoy looking at it through that lens this time.
I just want to bring up briefly too, the fashion in this film is insane.
It was fashion.
Oh my God. Keanu's suit was dope as hell. And even when it got dirty one time, he mentioned something about his shirt.
Yeah. It was a $200 shirt.
Yeah.
And I thought to myself, really?
Yeah. Lucifer was dressed to the nines. Gabriel's outfit was hitting. And then Papa Midnight, he was super fly.
Yeah, you're right.
I was like,
you're right.
You know, yeah.
Balthazar was tight.
Yeah, all of them were really like, you know, they had, I don't know what designers they were using or who did it, but like it was a very stylish film. Like,
yeah, Gabriel's look in the church.
Listen.
Yeah,
they came with
it. I love the look of this film, period.
I do too. I do too.
And I know we got to get to the segment, but let me just say, because I try not to, because I know that these aren't film reviews, so I try to hold these type of opinions till late in the show, but. And I think Aiko said earlier, I love this damn movie.
Me too.
And I kind of don't know why. Cause I can, if somebody like were to come up to me and be like, yo, this, and start naming all the flaws in this movie, I wouldn't disagree. I'd be like, you're right.
Yeah.
But I just love this movie.
Yeah.
And I think the look is one of the reasons.
Yeah.
The style of the clothes, the way LA looks in this movie.
Yes.
Very noir, very empty.
Yes.
You know, there's that one scene when the demons attack Constantine and Angela on the street. Where the hell is everybody? You know what I'm saying? It's like nobody, there's millions of people in this city. Nobody's on that street.
Yeah.
A bus comes by later.
Yeah.
But there's this emptiness there, and set pieces.
Mm-hmm.
The set design is great.
Yeah.
I love Constantine's his loft. I love the place when they go to see where Angela's sister killed herself. The swimming pool at the end. I could go on and on. The set design of this movie is excellent.
Shit, Constantine's watch. I was like, oh,
Constantine's
watch.
How
much money does this dude have?
Papa Midnight's crib. You know, it's just, or his club. Excuse me, but everything, just the way that this movie looks, it was very intentional. You know,
yeah.
And it's, I think it works. I think it works perfectly.
Yeah.
Arthur, you were about to ask me about Keanu's, the way he. I think you're gonna ask me to elaborate on the point I made earlier about how he portrayed this role.
Yeah.
He, just following that kind of noir path, he, you know, Keanu, if you were to say, he's very wooden at times, not just in this film, but in other films, but certain lines he delivers are very wooden. I wouldn't disagree with you, but in this film, it works to me.
Exactly.
And he's over the top into this place where it's like, he's almost playing a parody of some detective that he read in a, you know, a 1940s novel, but he's kind of tongue in cheek with it. But not so much that it's like, I can't take him seriously.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like a little peek of it. Like when he says, he calls Chaz kid, you know, and they're probably not that big a difference in age, but he's just like, you know, oh, you think this is like it is in the books, kid. You know, he has this kind of like world weary detective type vibe to him. Like, you know, like the, or that skinny fellow with the fat friend, you know, just these lines he delivers. It's like, where, what movie is this dude in? But it's working.
Yeah.
You know, so he has that vibe, that kind of like Sam Spade, but not really Sam Spade, like a bad actor playing Sam Spade vibe. And it works. Mm-hmm. And so I really like the way that he, and just the way he moves, Aiko, the way he kind of swaggers, yeah, you know, the way he wears his tie loose, yep, around his neck. The way he chain smokes, the way he kind of like just flings things around throughout the whole movie. It just, it works.
Yeah, I agree. I agree.
All right. I want to move into our segment. I really want to call it like the epilogue, like the post-credit sequence of these shows. But we're calling this Rewrite. This is a somewhat of a what-if segment. Where we can reimagine the trajectory of the major theme for the characters. Just something that if it was rewritten this way, it may have made the story more interesting, or at least wonder how it would have changed the story. And, you know, for me, the thing that I liked but didn't like about this film was the integration of some of biblical characters. The spear tip that actually killed Jesus, Gabriel, the Balthasar character, Lucifer coming. What I kind of didn't like was how it was tied so closely to Catholicism, because thematically it jibed with the three major monotheistic religions. Islam acknowledges Gabriel. Mm. Judaism acknowledges Gabriel. All three acknowledge the concept of Lucifer, Satan, the fallen angel. Faith, belief, you know, is at the center of all of these monotheistic religions. Mm. And I felt that if the story was rewritten to, you know, as, in other words, as androgynous as Gabriel the character was, that one religion was not played to its fullest, that there was actually an abstraction, and you don't know what religion everyone is, okay, you know, because in so I do believe that you needed Catholicism to anchor Angela's desire to redeem her sister, but that doesn't necessarily preclude, you know, Shia LaBeouf's character, you know, being Muslim and wanting to the same end, because it was basically, you know, it gave me the feeling like, okay, so if I'm you know, walking around and it's Friday and I just came from Juma prayer, you mean to tell me that if Mammon is unleashed to the world that I'm just gonna catch hell because I'm not a Catholic?
Yes.
Like Keanu ain't gonna save me too?
You're like, I'm not with that.
Right.
Like, that doesn't affect me. Why am I getting caught up in that? So you're saying,
you know, I've been adhering to all five pillars of Islam all my life, but I gotta deal with this chain smoker. Like, he's, so you know what I'm saying?
You're saying that you would have preferred, your rewrite would have been this film having a non-specific religion. In other words, it'd have been religion X, you know, basically generic religion X instead of being specific.
That's fair.
You know what, man? It's funny because I've had that feeling about other films. That, because it's like that question goes to your mind. Like, you just say, wait a minute. It's almost like the film is saying, yeah, we know that there's all these religions in the world.
Yeah.
But guess what? This one is right.
Yeah. It just seemed real heavy handed. And and to a very, very, very light degree, the original Matrix movie was doing this, where, you know, you had these symbols and concepts. You saw that Neo was a Christ-like figure, but he was a Christ-like figure that could fit within the framework of multiple belief systems, because there's a certain universality that exists. mm-hmm. you know, in those frameworks. And I just think it would have made for, I think it would have made for a more interesting film.
That's a, mm-hmm. that's, I mean, that's a really good point. I know you haven't seen The Exorcist, Isaac, but like, mm-hmm. they're very much rooted. It's fantastic.
Yeah, we can just, yeah.
I can watch it whenever. But they really do anchor the Catholicism in that film. Like, it's consistent throughout and dealing with this, you know, certain, you know, right. this whole situation. Whereas like this one, you know, Catholicism, yeah, I actually think you're right. Catholicism is used as the anchor, but it's like there's all these other influences that aren't acknowledged. And at the same time, it's almost like it's stylized, but not in a way, it kind of works against the film and not for it.
Yeah. Yeah. Like The Exorcist mm. almost siloed.
Yes.
Reagan.
That's
and
a great,
how that worked.
That's
and
a great
and
term.
I even
yes.
saw it as, oh, okay. So it's almost like Lucifer is using the loophole of Catholicism.
Right.
To be able to enter in.
Right.
You know, that mm. would have been, that would have been interesting for Constantine if it was, you know, like, and I'm saying loophole in quotes, by the way, but if there was a loophole in Islam that would have allowed, mm. you know, Jibril to do X and Lucifer would have been able to do Y through, you know, the Christianity belief system through the, you know, through like the Catholicism path. It, mm. You could have got really intricate with it, but I think it really would have worked.
Mm. You know what? I'm with you guys, but I'm a little on the fence because I wonder if by making it more universal, basically, mm-hmm. And making the religious example or religious tenets in this film almost like archetype instead mm-hmm. of, you know, the epitome. I wonder, would that dilute things at all? You know what I'm saying? Or would it make it too complex?
Mm.
And I, you know, I'm just throwing that out there because my gut is saying no. I think it wouldn't have, I think it would have made it more mm-hmm. interesting. Like Arthur said, I think it would have made it more of a commentary on religion in general mm-hmm. and not specifically Catholicism or Christianity. But I don't know. I'm a little on the fence because I did really enjoy, and maybe it's because living in a Western culture, I'm obviously much more exposed to Christianity than anything else.
Mm-hmm.
And I did enjoy seeing those archetypes kind of turned up on their side of their heads. Like it was interesting to me to see Gabriel played, like you said, almost non-binary or androgynous.
Yeah.
It was interesting for me just how Constantine related to the demons, you know, calling them assholes, you know what I'm saying? It was just like, he talked to them like they're people, you know, he's like, you know, you're an asshole, you know? And it's like, this Balthazar, he's like, man, fuck, you know, he mm-hmm. gave the finger to Lucifer
yeah,
as he was dying.
On the way
like,
out.
Yeah,
yeah,
that was
yeah.
funny.
It's
I love like, that. That was mm-hmm. hilarious.
Just the way they kind of, and because I've been exposed to those figures in Christian religion or mythology, again, depending upon your point of view, my whole life, it's like seeing them kind of turn on their head a little bit like that was mm-hmm. was interesting to me. So I don't know. I guess what I'm saying is that the specificity that is allowed by choosing one faith,
mm-hmm.
you lose some of that specificity if you, you know, apply this or you make this much more of a ambiguous kind of commentary on religion in general, not getting specific about one religion.
Yeah.
So that's kind of why I'm on the fence.
Yeah, well, like,
but I like that rewrite.
Do you guys believe that the film was kind of set up to the way that it ended, and even with Papa Midnight's character, that there could have been sequels?
Mm, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think Keanu even talked, I think for years, because I was, you know, again, as being like a cult fan of this, I was just like every, you know, year I'll Google
yeah.
just to see, okay, what's, yeah. you know, is there any talk about the sequels going on?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And Keanu would constantly, when he would be asked about it, he was like, I'm down for it. We just haven't figured out a way to make it happen.
Yeah.
And it's been, this movie came out in 2005.
Yeah.
So the likelihood, you know what? I can't even say that. Cause shit, they brought back Halloween and
Bill
you know,
and
what they recently, yeah, they've recently done a lot of sequels from movies that are 20 and 30 years old.
I mean,
so,
it could work.
Yeah. I mean, and it sets it up because Lucifer, you know, basically says, I'm going to give you the opportunity to prove that your soul belongs in hell.
Mm-hmm.
Constantine's challenge then is, you know, of course, to, you know, to disprove him.
Yeah.
And he starts by, and side note, it's hilarious how he almost kisses Angela like three times in the film. That was funny.
Yeah.
To me. But he starts by, you know, giving her back the spear of destiny, I think,
mm-hmm.
and telling her, keep it away from everybody, including me.
Yeah.
And then, you know, he does a little voiceover again, classic nod to the old detective movies. He does a little voiceover at the end, and you see him stick a piece of gum in his mouth,
mm-hmm.
you
like know, nicotine and it's or like, something.
Right, exactly. So it's like he's trying to go on that path.
Yeah.
So the question, it's an open-ended question: is he going to be able to stay on that path? I think he alludes to the fact that things have changed now because of the events of the film. Mm-hmm. You know, the lines are not as definitive as they were before. So you kind of get the idea that, yeah, there's going to be more problems with Lucifer, you know, and his brood, and maybe even Gabriel, if she find or he, she, they finds a way to, you know, regain her abilities. So I think I'm down, I would love
to see it. I mean, because like Keanu would be allowed to age in real time, like, you know what I mean, like he's not there's no superpowers or anything that you have to worry about,
right.
Or like, why are you still young, anything like that, like,
right, been on... Rachel Weisz too.
Yeah.
But okay, before we leave though, Arthur, you started this episode because you thought it was, you know, your whole commentary was like, this movie was just weird.
Yeah.
So now that we've kind of laid some things out to you, I know you're probably going to watch it again, but what are your thoughts on the film now?
Overall, I did like it. I always intended to watch it more than once. I mean, I knew halfway into it, it was like, okay, I'm going to have to see this again. Because as things get revealed,
mm-hmm.
all of that knowledge refers back to how the film started out. You know,
mm-hmm.
So I'm going to stand by the weirdness, but I'm going to rewatch it with the knowledge of, first of all, the fact that you told me that Lucifer pulled the lung cancer out, that just mm-hmm. changed everything for me. Okay. Let me go ahead and watch this movie.
Wow.
That's funny.
Wow.
Because I was like,
you were so caught up in the redemption of Constantine that you blanked out and didn't see
understand what he was doing. I mean, you know what I thought he was doing? I literally thought he was trying to massage his heart. He was trying to pull a Neo to save Trinity, and he was trying to massage her heart to come back to life. So I knew that he was bringing him back to life in some kind of way, but I just didn't understand what happened. Because so in other words, at the close of the film,
mm-hmm.
I still believe that he was on the clock,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
because he was still succumbing to lung cancer.
Okay. Interesting. I'll be interested in talking to you after you view it again now.
Yeah. All right. We have a very special episode coming in a few weeks. On our next show, we will be joined by the master of suspense himself, Alfred Hitchcock. Please join us as we look at redemption through the lens of Hitch's brilliant 1946 thriller, Notorious. I'm Arthur. Isaac's on my left. Jahan's on special assignment.
Deep,
we're going to bring him
deep
back.
Undercover.
Deep undercover. But we have Aiko with us. We are Snobs on Film. We will see you next show. But subscribe to the show in Apple Podcasts. Please leave a review. It does help for discovery. We can be found on Spotify. You can follow us there. We are distributed everywhere. Fine RSS feeds are consumed. And reach out to us. Our Twitter handle is Snobs on Film. See you next show.